welcome to A Drummer's Guide to the podcast, all about the things it takes to be a professional musician aside from actually playing your instrument. My name is Emily Dolan Davis. I am a drummer by trade, and I wanted to talk today about a subject that was inspired by a post I saw by a musician actress called Andy Allo. Now this is sort of covering a subject that I've been wanting to talk about for a while, but I didn't quite know how to frame it, and I saw this post and I was like, yes, this is the moment. So Andy Allo, and if you want to check this out, this is on her Instagram profile. She's talking about climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and she talks about the inner voice that, when she was thinking about doing this thing, was basically saying to her, you can't do this, you're unfit, da 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 da, like all the negative things, all the things that were the reasons that she shouldn't be doing it, right? And she was saying about, you know, before she would just be like, oh, okay, yeah, like, all right, yeah, I shouldn't do it, and just give up. But she changed her thinking in a way of kind of questioning it, talking to it, and this resonated with me so much, because I've had such a similar experience, basically. Now, this inner voice, it's my friend now, but for the majority of my life, so bar the last 4 or 5 years, maybe 5 years, if I'm being kind to myself, which I try to be, this inner voice was very negative. You can call this inner voice whatever you want. You can call it like gut instinct, or like just your initial reaction to something, whatever it is for you. My inner voice, when something would happen, I would be given an opportunity, or, you know, something that would make it flare up, I would hear it and it would say something negative, and generally speaking, I would just ignore it and just go, oh, that's just my insecurity, like completely dismiss it and move on. And sometimes this voice was very mean to me, like, and I understand why now. I was trying to get my attention because I was ignoring it for so much time. By the way, just to preempt this, I at times probably will sound like I am slightly schizophrenic or I have multiple personalities, because I'm going to talk about this inner voice as a separate entity to me, because I often see it that way and it makes it easier for me to deal with it. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples where this voice tried to warn me. And I ignored it. I just put it down to, that's just your insecurity, pat on the head, like, I'm going to ignore you, I'm not going to acknowledge you, because if I do, then I'm just not going to do anything. And maybe there's value, maybe there was value in that at the time. I certainly learned a lot from it, I can tell you that. So because I've been sat here thinking about this, and as you know, if you've followed me for any amount of time, I very much have a really, really, really horrendous memory. Like, really, really bad. And I think that realistically, and this is a human trait, this is not just me, this is what our brains do, apparently, according to studies. You know, you can retrospectively look back at things and kind of change details so that it kind of, you can change a story. So this is what I remember it as. I'm not saying that this is exactly how it went, but this is what I remember. So the first thing that I can think of that sort of came to my head was, I talk about this a lot, my first ever professional recording session, and preparing for that, I was learning 6 songs for this artist called Zane Simone. Now, her music is still online, so you can still hear it. I'm not on it, because I failed epically. I did not drum on her music. She's a very good artist. Sorry, I just got my coffee. It's Monday morning right now. Mm. But when I was preparing for that, I distinctly remember being in a rehearsal room, playing through these songs, and at the time, I mean, I was 17, I didn't know to the level to which I needed to prepare for this, but I thought I did, because, you know, I was young, I was maybe, like, maybe arrogant is the wrong word, but I just kind of was, I'd come from being a big fish in a little pond, and this was the moment that I became a very small fish, a minnow, if you like, in an ocean. I just didn't realise it at the time. So anyway, I was sort of playing through these songs, and there I do remember so well, so vividly, a voice in my head when I would play stuff through, a voice saying, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. That's not solid enough. Like, just that's not good enough. And I said to that voice, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. I can, now bear in mind, I've always suffered with imposter syndrome. So this is nothing new to me. It was different. It felt different though. And in a way, I've always felt like I was pulling the wool over people's eyes because I just don't think I'm that brilliant at anything, really. That's the truth of it. That's the truth of my brain and how I've always felt about myself. Maybe that's a bit too much, but it is who I am. So I said to myself, it will be fine. You're getting away with it. You've been getting away with it for this long. And at this point, I've been playing for 6 years. So why would this be any different, sort of thing? It will be fine. It will be fine. And at the end of playing each of these songs, playing them through and through and through, you know, what I know now is that they were nowhere close to where they needed to be. Again, this was a learning process. Anyway, I ignored this voice. I just thought, this is just your insecurity. This is just your imposter syndrome coming up. Like, you'll be fine. You've been getting away with it this far, so just keep going. Anyway, if you've listened to my episode on failure, it's an early one, maybe episode 7 or something, I did not get away with it, not even slightly. In fact, I crashed and burned more spectacularly than I could ever imagine. I learned a lot, you know, and there was a great value in that experience. It was so painful. Yeah. I'm glad it happened. But anyway, that is an example of me having that voice and just ignoring it and rationalizing it. I think that's it. I think it's rationalizing it as, no, it's fine. Pat that little voice on the head and ignore it. Like, you have no value here. This is just your insecurity. Let's move on. Even though in the depth of my soul, in my gut, I knew, and I ignored it. Anyway, so there's one, crashed and burned. Another one that I have never spoken about, and is, it's difficult for me to share because I don't know why. I feel ashamed of the way that I thought about this. Let me just go into it and then I'll try and explain my rationale for feeling like that. So when I very first got the call for The Darkness and I spoke to Dan on the phone, and that was lovely and it was such a nice conversation and the whole thing, it was so exciting. It felt like this was going to be one of those moments, and arguably it was, you know, in your career where you just go, yeah, this is going to be a pivotal moment. Definitely was. Now, when he was talking about, we've just parted ways with our drummer, we're looking for someone new to record this album, potentially tour moving forward, da 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 da. You know, this very first conversation, it probably was, I don't know, half an hour, probably not even that. There was so much of me, I was like, wow, this is a really great opportunity. This is amazing. This is, you know, wow, I can't believe that they found me. I mean, let's face it, my ego was being fed. I was just like, oh, they're calling me, how exciting, you know, all those things. That's the reality of it. That's the truth of it. I'm being honest with you. It felt exciting, but there was a voice in me that went, Emily, you do not and have never wanted to be a band member. You don't want that. You don't want to be stuck, in inverted commas, with one group of people. You know that by being in a band, you are essentially in the equivalent of a marriage with 2, 3, 4 other people, 5 other people, depending on how big the band is. And I had experienced this in my life, and it's the one thing, not the one thing, one of a few things that I was like, nah, like that I learned early on, nah, not for me. I love being a hired gun. I love the impermanence of it. I love the variety of it. I love the grind of it, I guess, which is a bit of a toxic term these days, but I enjoy, oh, this is going to sound awful. I enjoy the struggle of it. I enjoy the fact that I feel like this lone wolf in the world that's just going out and carving my path. And that's not to say that it's not difficult. It is. It's hard. It's tough. I like it. I like the challenge. I like challenge. I love it. Now, all these things ran through my head as I got off the phone from Dan. And I remember that distinctly. And I remember where I was. I was living with Sheree, so say, at the time. I remember I was in the garden. I was outside the drum studio that she had built, that she still has. And I remember getting off this call. I remember where I was when the call started. I was on the stairs in the house. I walked outside. We had the call. It was great. Dan seemed so lovely, which he was, and it still is. Lovely, lovely man. But I just remember that voice, that gut instinct going, this isn't right, this isn't for you, don't do it. But again, I just went, this is just your insecurity. I just, again, patted that voice on the head and went, don't worry about it. Shh. And in some ways, I'm glad that I did, because the opportunity that came from not listening to that voice led to so many amazing things. You know, I always say this, that album, I'm so proud of being on Last of Our Kind. I look back so fondly on that time with the lads recording that album. I look back so fondly on the time, you know, touring with them, doing those shows over in Ireland. Admittedly, it ended and it was sad and that was difficult, but I learned so much. But at the end of that period of time, so it was about a year and a half, I suppose, or maybe, yeah, a year and a half, 2 years? Almost 2 years from that first phone call with Dan to leaving the band. That was 2 years. And the very last sort of breaking point for me, the last thought was, you don't want to be in a band. You don't want to be stuck with the same people. You don't want to be playing the same songs over and over again. You want to be out playing with many different people in many different situations. So it was the same thought that was the initial reaction. It took me 2 years of a lot of turmoil. It was great. There were so many wonderful moments. But in the moments where I was alone and able to think, and not caught up in working, because when I'm working, I'm working and I'm focused, and you know, nothing else infiltrates my thoughts, because it's not, to me, in my head, it's not professional. You know, it's, I'm paid to do a job, and therefore my personal feelings on, there's a limit obviously, but my personal feelings on most situations are not relevant. That is not my job. So anyway, but in those moments of silence or with people that I was able to be honest with, I was in so much pain, turmoil, distress. I was in tears. I was not happy. I knew I shouldn't be there on a level. I knew it was wrong. But anyway, it's fine. It all worked out well, I think. At least I can say from my side, I think it did. I hope that they feel the same. I really do. And again, I still have so much love for them. And it wasn't about them necessarily. It was just the situation and me and my personality and what works for me. But again, it was sort of a process. It took a while to get there, but I got there. And then, you know, this voice isn't just a work-related voice. You know, I've been in relationships where I've kind of been, I suppose, at, like, relationship with people where our relationship was hidden by the other person, where they wouldn't acknowledge that we were together unless, you know, only in the confines of me and them, then they'd be like, oh yeah, no, we're together. But to the outside world, no. They wouldn't let anyone know. They were, well, I don't know. That's up to them what they were feeling. But I felt ashamed. I felt a lot of shame around that and not good enough. And again, I can remember so many times where my inner voice would just be going, what are you doing? What are you doing? I remember, like, this is cringy. It often would catch myself in front of a mirror and I'd just lock eyes with myself and that inner voice would be so mean to me and like, I'm not going to repeat any of the stuff that I would say to myself. It's the most heinous things you could ever think of anyone ever saying to anyone. And I was saying it to myself and I would be in tears and I just... But again, I would just suppress this inner voice that was essentially trying to just warn me and be like, what are you doing? Like, come on. What are you doing? So, yeah. This inner voice, this gut instinct, it's an interesting thing to kind of notice, I suppose. So there was a turning point for me and where I had been avoiding this voice and suppressing it and placating it and all these things, I happened to read a book, or listen to book, to a book, I should say, called The Chimp Paradox by Professor Steve Peters. Now, this book is life-changing for me. If anyone is into any sort of psychology or understanding your brain a little better, or this relationship with your inner voice, or inner chimp, as he puts it, I cannot recommend this book enough. It's so insightful. It's so, I think it's wonderful. It's probably, I'd say it's my favourite sort of non-fiction book in life, I think. It certainly had the most impact on me, definitely. Now this book, I'm going to butcher what it's about, but look into it because it's really, really interesting. The Chimp Paradox is essentially this model that Professor Steve Peters has put together to kind of make you understand your brain and how it relates, like the different parts of the brain relate to each other. And in his model, there are three parts to the brain. There's the human side, which is the person that you are, you know, all the things like your rational side. And you know, when you're in a great place and you're able to sort of just think about things, it's how you want to be. Then there's the computer, which is kind of all your autopilots. It's all the habits that you have. It's your sort of like, when this happens, this automatically happens. Like, you know, and that comes from experience and whatever. The third part of your brain is the chimp. And this is kind of the animalistic side, the reactionary side, the emotional side. And that's not to say that these are exclusive traits of each side of the brain, but on the whole, it's kind of very reactive. It's your initial response. Now, my chimp, I choose to see it as my instinct, my gut. It's that voice that was talking to me all those times that I patted that little chimp on the head and went, be on your way, I'm doing this. And I ignored it. And when I read this book, something just shifted in me. And this book kind of, promotes, rather than ignoring that chimp or being controlled by it. You know, some people, I'm not this kind of person. Well, I don't think, I'm sure I am sometimes, but let's say you get into like a car accident, like not a serious one, like a little prang in your car. Road rage. Let's talk about road rage. Some people are just, and you know, they react. That in a classical sense would be your chimp. And rather than either ignoring your chimp, like I did, or letting it take you over in, say, a road rage example, it promotes this idea of actually talking to your chimp, becoming friends with your chimp, and noticing that it's actually trying to tell you something. And this idea changed my life. Has changed my life. It makes me sound like I have a multiple personality disorder. Hey, there's a chance I do. There's a chance. But I choose to believe that I don't. This is just my chimp. So what that means then, or what that has meant since I sort of noticed this, was when my chimp sparks up, which it does, and can I just say, because I'd suppressed it for so long, that voice got quieter and quieter. So it's taken me time to allow my chimp to feel safe enough to speak up sometimes and know that I'm going to listen now, because for years I just didn't. But now, when I hear that inner voice, I question it. We have a conversation. You know, I'll give you some examples because it's probably the easiest way. Like, because basically I just want to know what's actually going on with that voice, whether it's insecurity, whether it's valid what they're saying, whether it's some sort of blind spot that I have, you know, whether it's because of past experiences that the chimp is reacting this way. Anyway, I'll give you some examples because it's much easier. So, in fact, I'll give you just one example because, yeah, there's been a few recently, but I'm not ready to talk about those yet, but I will. At some point, I will. So, this is an example that I do come back to a lot because it was a real turning point, again, in the way that I approached something, because in the past, had this situation come up, I would have run for the hills. I would have run for the hills because the fear was so great. And that was when I got asked to do the Voice Kids. Because when I met up with the musical director for that, and we were sat and we were having a coffee, and he was explaining to me what the gig entails, that voice was screaming at me, screaming so loud. It was saying to me, you are not good enough to play with these musicians. These musicians are world class. You are not. You don't belong there. You're not good enough. They are going to find you out. You are going to let this person down. And this person that I was sat in front of, the amount of respect that I have for them, and the amount that I didn't want to let them down, was so intense that this voice was going, you are going to let them down because you're not good enough. You can't do this. Don't be ridiculous. And then he was saying about the reading side of things, which was such a huge weakness for me. So that voice was going, look, and you can't read. I even listened to that voice and said, well, can I write my own charts? Because I knew that I can rely on my own charts, definitely. But reading someone else's charts, no. I knew that I was no good at that. Like, but not even just like, oh, I'm not great. Like, literally, did not have that skill at all. And when I voiced this, can I just write my own charts? He was like, well, not really. Just the pace of it, the way that we work, you know, no, essentially. So that voice sparked up again. You cannot say yes to this. This is ridiculous. You do not belong here. You are not good enough to be here. You know, what the hell are you doing? You are going to let this, you're going to let them down. Everyone's going to find out. No one's going to call you for work ever again. Everyone's going to realise how rubbish you are. You can't do this. So that was the voice that was screaming in my head. But luckily, I had read this book. And for whatever reason, the voice that came out of me went, yep, I'm in. I want to do this. My chimp was not happy. My chimp was not happy with this. But what happened after that was I then went into conversation mode and I talked it out with my chimp, and it was just like, right, here are the things that I am terrified of. And what it was, like I say, it was the reading thing. It was not feeling like I was good enough to be in the room with these people, even though I had already played with half the musicians in the band. And I knew that those musicians had not only thought, oh, Emily might be good for this gig, but, you know, a discussion would have been had. So there would have been multiple people that would have gone, yeah, get her in. You know, all these things are basically that told me, you know, all the things that I felt weak about, and if this had been back in the day, I would have ignored those voices and just gone, I'd be fine. Pat that little chimp on the head and be on his way. But I didn't. I listened and I went, right, okay. And this is the conversations that I have with myself. Literally, I go, right, okay, what are we going to do about this? What's the plan? Right, first of all, what's wrong? What are the biggest obstacles here? How are we going to feel better about this? How are we going to sort this out? So it became about essentially putting together a boot camp for myself for learning to read properly, which obviously worked. It became about doing visualizations of being in the room with those people and everyone moving and grooving together and looking round at each other, smiling, and everyone being really happy with what I was doing and it feeling really good, because I knew what it felt to feel good whilst playing and feeling comfortable as well, because I knew that I'd be anxiety ridden, which takes me out and onto the surface of playing rather than being in the playing, if that makes sense. I talk a lot more about that in my episode about being present. So I wanted to cultivate that. So I thought, right, if I imagine that sort of stuff, da-da-da. Also things like just looking after myself mentally, physically, all that sort of stuff, because, you know, I knew that there would be long, intensive days. So also training that. I would make myself work solidly for 8-10 hours a day, just so that I got into that habit. You know, the way that I live my life, I like to work for a few hours, I like to take a break, you know, there's a way that I work personally that works for me. But I knew that I would be on someone else's time. The other thing is I made sure that I knew how the gig ran. Like, literally, I went through it with the MD. I was like, right, I need you to tell me the literal things that happen when, from the point of, right, we're going to play this song to we finish playing this song, like, in the rehearsal room. Tell me every step. And bless him, he did. He went into full detail. I think he understands how my brain works. In fact, I know that he does, because the way that he communicates with me, we're on a similar level. In fact, he's just really good at communicating with everyone. Let's not even pretend like it's some special thing. Anyway, but knowing that, I was drilling that way of working. I was doing it day in and day out for the 3 months leading up to the first gig. The first rehearsal day. And like I said, and that also included mentally. So I would, every day, I would have a conversation with my chimp, ask it how it was feeling about stuff. And then just talk about it. You know, I remember distinctly walking in a field and having a freak out. And the freak out was, and I was already like halfway through, like a month and a half into doing all this stuff, and it was working, and I was growing, and I was getting there, and I could see that I was going to be able to do this. But my chimp was saying to me, look, what if it all falls apart? What if you're not good enough? What if you get there and there's a reprise of that moment when you were 17 and you can't do the job and they ask you to leave? What then? What if you let everyone down? What if you can't do it? And I would have a conversation, and I remember saying, okay, if that does happen, that would suck, first of all, and I'm not planning for that to happen, but not luckily, I will always find a way around stuff. It's a strength of mine. It's also a massive flaw, and I won't go into why. But because of the nature of the gig, because there's the voice adults and there's the voice kids. I was doing the voice kids, and the drummer on the voice adults was Dexter Hercules. Great drummer, love him. Known him a long time, probably since he was about 13, I suppose. And I thought, well, The very worst case scenario for me is letting people down. It's not even not being able to do the job. That sucks, and my ego would be hurt, and, you know, but I can rebuild. I know that I can do that because I've done it. But letting people down that I care about and I respect and, you know, being given this opportunity and then not being able to follow through, that was the biggest thing for me. That was the biggest thing. I don't like letting people down. It's one of my... I hate it more than anything. I hate hurting people. I hate it. I can't tell you. But in my head, I was like, yeah, that would suck. But at least Dexter's there doing the adults. And he will have already been doing the gig for a couple of months. So, worst case scenario, they can just put him on the gig. That's fine. That's fine. And it would suck for me. And I would hate myself. I wasn't able to do it, but I can rebuild. I've done it before, I'll do it again. And that kind of settled me. Now, I'm not saying that I didn't go in sort of like still anxious and scared and all that sort of stuff, and my chimp was still chattering away, which he was a lot. But being able to actually have a conversation about it and then put things in place to kind of just acknowledge what the chimp is saying, it's things like, you know, I would catch myself, say, on a record day where I was suddenly just like a bit overwhelmed. And another thing about the chimp paradox, it says, you know, the chimp is driven by our evolutionary responses in terms of things like when you feel danger, your chimp reacts because it's trying to get you out of danger. And some things are irrational, like, for instance, when people have panic attacks, they're not necessarily related to what's actually going on. Anyway, I would find myself in, and like I say, specifically, I remember one of the record days, and I was just suddenly like, oh my God, I feel really overwhelmed, and really, oh my God, can I do this? Looking back, it's ridiculous, you know. But anyway, and this was my chimp, just suddenly aware and scared, and just going, oh my gosh, we're in danger right now. We need to leave. So I would just sort of like be like, look, it's fine. We're fine. We've done all the work. Breathe. We have our crew here. Like, we are, you know, this is your family. You are safe. You are safe. And just breathing through that and just calming down the chimp. And, you know, maybe me and my chimp would have had a conversation on the way home in the car, and we could talk out why that was happening, and you know, there were always reasons for it, you know. Maybe a conversation had happened that had made me feel very vulnerable, which I'm not good at when I'm in a professional setting. I've gotten better, actually. I think I've got, weirdly, the Voice Kids actually has helped me become more vulnerable in a professional setting, not to the point of being unprofessional, obviously, but it's interesting. It's just interesting. And now I feel like I can confidently say that another thing about the book, they say that you should name your chimp. My chimp is called Bob. So me and Bob are, I feel like we're a team now. I feel like we're friends. I'm not saying that we don't disagree sometimes, and sometimes what Bob is saying is unfounded, but I listen, and often Bob is telling me so many things that once I act upon them, other things really fall into place. And that's not to say that the actions that are taken off the back of what my chimp is saying aren't difficult. They are. I know that in the long run they're correct. And I know it because I feel it, because when I take those actions, things just relax a little bit. And so I try to make sure also that I do check in periodically with Bob. I am due a catch up today, I think, actually. I'll probably go and have a chat to him. In fairness, we had one yesterday. It was good. It was very insightful. But yeah, but I think back to all the times where I was... Again, there's so many times, and this podcast actually has been a really good way to try and be more open and vulnerable with people, because I've been very bad at that, and it scares me a lot. But I remember there's been so many times where I've been by myself somewhere in tears, and just, you know, so desperate to just desperate, just desperate, and just in a state of like, just somebody please help me, something, please. And if I had, in those moments, been able to talk to Bob, it might have made things a lot easier. No, maybe not easier, but I don't know, maybe it would have been easier, slightly. It's still hard, still very, very difficult. Another fun one is, so this is from the book. again, check it out, The Chimp Paradox, life-changing. Another very quick one that I love, that works so well for me, is if I wake up in the middle of the night and my mind starts racing, which is Bob, that's Bob. Bob likes to wake, all chimps like to wake up in the middle of the night and start making you start freaking out about stuff. And then you wake up in the morning and you go, that was so ridiculous, why was I even bothering about that? Me and Bob have a rule. If I wake up in the middle of the night and he starts chatting on, I say, look, I want to hear what you have to say, but the rule is we can't talk until after 8 in the morning. And when I say that, I swear to you, I'm asleep again within about 30 seconds. It's ridiculous. I don't know why it works, but it works. And that's the other thing I say to Bob. I say, Bob, the best thing right now is for us to get sleep so that we can tackle this rested tomorrow. So we'll talk about it tomorrow, after 8 o'clock. As long as it's after 8 o'clock, then it's fine. Which reminds me, I don't know why I've never thought about this. That was always the rule at Christmas. So me and my sister would always wake up at like 4 in the morning. Ah, it's Christmas, it's so exciting. But our parents always said to us, that's fine, you wake up. You are not allowed to come in to see us until after sunrise. So it's a similar thing with Bob. 8 o'clock and then we're allowed to talk. And often the next day, I can't remember what in the world Bob was chatting about. But obviously it wasn't that important, because if it was, it would come up again. So anyway, there's an insight into my brain, my inner chimp, my Bob. Thank you, Andy Allo, for giving me the sort of inspiration of how to frame this, that I don't sound too insane. I think I still do, but I'm open to it. It's fine. Like, again, as I always say, if this helps one person, I've done my job. That's all I'm trying to do. Again, I can't stress enough, go check out The Chimp Paradox if this has, like, intrigued you in any capacity. It's one of the best books ever. I'm trying to think. I'd potentially would say that it's my favourite book ever. Potentially. Possibly. It's certainly top three. Anyway, but yeah, thank you to Andy Allo for framing this well. And yeah, I hope that this has sort of resonated with you in some sort of way. I'd love to know what your chimp is called, if you decide to name it. And if, yeah, like, I think we all have that inner voice, and it's just interesting, rather than ignoring it the way I was for so long, but instead chatting to it, questioning it, having a conversation. It's just such a different way of approaching life. And do you know what? That inner voice is difficult to listen to sometimes, but it's becoming the most invaluable compass of what I should be up to, of where I should be, of how I should be acting, of the actions I should be taking, of the moves I should be making. Nice little rhyme there, almost Police-esque. No, Police or Sting? Every breath you take. Oh, I don't know, whatever. Sting singing it, so yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so anyway, I'm gonna go now. I need to go and have a chat with Bob. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do like, share and subscribe. If you'd like to support this podcast over on Patreon, you can at patreon.com/EmilyDrums. And if you'd like to see any of the other hundreds of things that I get up to in my life, because I do like to keep busy, you can go to emilydrums.com. You can see all the different things that I do there. But anyway, I hope you're keeping well. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, I am sending you lots of love, you and your chimp. And I will see you next time for another subject. All right, lots of love. Bye.